Clarkie, where the hell are you?
Boy, seriously, this north side, I'm Liverpool, mate. I'm a Westie. I know my way around there. I'm on Forest Way. I'm stuck in traffic, I'm sorry.
Mate, I told you to leave a bit earlier.
Mate, I left early. I give myself plenty of time. The last thing I want to do is be late for you, boys.
Can I ask you, have you ever actually ever been to French's Forest?
Yes, I have. My good friend Duncan Kerr lives in French's Forest.
Oh, right.
I'll spend plenty of time this way.
How are you holding up, mate? It's a very big book launch and 60 Minutes on Sunday night, and so a lot of publicity. It's all going well.
Yeah, mate, everything's good. It was obviously, it was great to write the book, to be honest. For the first time, to be able to turn around and have a look at where I've come from and how lucky I've been to play with some of the most amazing players through my career, and the journey I've travelled was such a good experience to write the book, and obviously some tough times, some hard things to talk about. I think, you know, through my career, I kept so much in and close to my chest, especially when it came to my family and even in regards to Philip Hughes as well. So that was really difficult, and I found that I still find it quite raw and hard to talk about, and I guess you probably saw that for the people that watched the 60 Minutes show.
Yeah, very much so. You delve into that in the book as well, which would have been difficult for you. And then we see the mention, you know, that dreaded word, I guess, for a sports person is fear, Michael. Has that, I mean, I know you went out and you made 99 for against Mossman the other day. Has that sort of subsided for you?
Yeah, I think it has, TK, to be honest. I think playing a couple of club games allowed me to see if that was there. And I know, you know, there's a big gap in standard between playing international cricket and playing club cricket, don't get me wrong. But I felt a lot more comfortable playing than what I did, you know, call it 12 months ago or a year and a half ago. So, yeah, look, again, that's something that was hard to accept. Let alone, you know, the writing part on a piece of paper was probably the best thing for me to get it off my chest and talk about it openly, because I think, especially young boys and girls, I think you do experience that through your life. And it's not about cricket. This is just something happens or you see something and you might get that feeling, that fear in your stomach. And it's hard to speak about, especially playing a sport that, you know, I think if you've got any type of fear, you can't hide from it.
No.
It's there for everybody to see. And that was probably what was really difficult for me to deal with. I was too embarrassed to talk about it at the time. I didn't feel like it was going to affect my performance. I thought I was a good enough player to get away with it, and it wouldn't have, you know, wouldn't have made me not make as many runs as I would have liked, or nobody would have noticed it. But yeah, I think the fact I've been able to get it off my chest, be open, be honest about it and acknowledge it, I think that was the best thing for me.
Yeah, mate, I think open and honest is the reason people are going to like your book. And I think that's what came through on 60 Minutes. They were always going to be asking the hard questions, and they sort of hit you up with every sort of hard, controversial thing. But you must have made a pact with yourself that if I'm going to do this book, I've got to give it all, you know. I've got to tell it how it was.
That's spot on. That's exactly what I said to myself, Slats, and I spoke to my wife about it and my parents. And, you know, I think one of the hardest things writing about and talking about is the stuff that happened in my personal life with, you know, my mum and dad's breakup, my mum having a brain hemorrhage, my dad having cancer twice, my grandmother dying, my sister nearly dying, giving birth to her child, you know, all within a 12-month period. For me to, you know, I've always kept that so tight, so close to my chest. But again, I feel you know, a bit of relief that I was able to be open and honest about it, because, you know, people go through these things. And I'm no different to anybody else, that, you know, when you have suffering or when you have a death or when you have tough times as a family, you need the people around you. And I think that allows people to see and realise that you can't have success or you can't make it to the top without help. You can't do it on your own. Mm. And the people that I've been lucky enough to have from day one and still have close to me are my close friends and my family. So, you know, I wanted this book to be honest. And I know there's going to be things in there that people disagree or their opinion's different or they saw it different at the time. But that's why it's my story. It's my truth. And I've tried to be you know, 100% open and honest and not leave things out and not sugarcoat things. And, you know, I think I've so much respect for Ali Langdon. She asked the tough questions the other night and didn't sugarcoat anything. And, you know, I just tried to, like I said, be as honest as I could be.
Yeah.
We're lucky enough to be chatting with former Aussie skipper in Michael Clark. Clarkey, a human emotion is we all want to be loved. For some inexplicable reason, do you feel not loved by the Aussie public? I mean, you should be, but do you feel loved by the Aussie public?
No, not really, TK. I think I'm past all that. I think I got to a stage at about 27 or 28 where I accepted who I was, you know, and I wish that happened earlier. And I think there's no doubt I was chasing, you know, being liked by everybody at the start of my career, and that was really hard to deal with when, you know, you weren't liked. I wasn't liked by everyone, or I didn't feel that way. But I got to a stage where I accepted that I was different, and I didn't plan to be different. I just, you know, the perception of what an Australian cricketer or an Australian captain needs to be versus, you know, what I was, and people saw a difference there. But, you know, I and that's why I said on 60 Minutes, I have no reason to apologise. I'm proud of what I did. I'm proud of my values, the way my family brought me up. I'm proud of, you know, the way I loved playing for Australia and how I represented the baggy green. And, you know, because I, you know, didn't do a lot of things that past captains did, or the perception was I didn't, doesn't mean I didn't value playing this great game as much as any of them. Mark Taylor, Alan Border, Steve Waugh, Ricky Ponting. It was just, I had my own style. I had my own way, and, you know, I'm proud of that.
Yeah, and that's the only way you could do it. We've been playing little highlights of your career right through the show today, and it can't be forgotten what you actually achieved on the field, mate. And that didn't get mentioned enough on 60 Minutes, and I hope I hope you've spent the time to run through those big innings, like the 300 in the book. Do you go through all those sort of moments?
Yeah, I do. I didn't want the book to be a cricket book. I wanted it to be about my life, because I think cricket's a part of my life, but it's not everything. But I, of course I do, because I didn't when I was playing flat. Like, I think back to the 300 at the SCG, and I didn't stop and realise what I'd achieved and how amazing that is to make 300 for your country. I didn't even think about that. It was more, I wanted to make 400. Or the next day I went to training because I thought, you know, I missed my back foot cover drive. I didn't hit that as well as I would have liked. So every day I was trying to become better. So I never really reflected, or I never stopped to smell the roses. And that's what I say. For the first time in my career, in my life, it was nice to turn around and look at some of the things I was lucky enough to achieve as a player and as a person.
Now, tell me this. I've been saying for 2 days.
Here we go.
What is...
Oh, no, I'm nervous.
No, don't be nervous. You and I have a love for cars.
Oh,
all right. Yeah, now, I don't profess to have been able to afford that red Ferrari many, many moons ago.
You bought it anyway.
You could afford yours. Why? What is it about owning a red Ferrari that makes people think you're a dickhead? I just don't get it, Clarkey.
Well, mate, like you, as you know me well, and so you've known from a young age, I've always loved cars.
I know.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, isn't it?
I know. This is where I start have nothing to apologise for, because I was not born with a silver spoon in my mouth. My mum and dad worked their backside off to put bread and milk on the table for my sister and I saved my ass off to buy that car.
Yes.
You know, I was never given anything for free. I worked hard to achieve everything I've achieved in my life, and I'll continue to work hard, and I want my daughter to do the same. And I saved my money and I went and bought a car that I dreamt of having. Oh. You know, the car that I had on my wall.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't apologise for that. And I guess, I hope with people reading my book, they will know from a young age that, you know, I did. I had a love of two things. And they weren't women. It was cricket, cover drives, and cars. And that's what I tried to chase.
What order?
I think it was just cricket first, cars second.
And now a love of your lovely daughter, Kelsey Lee, mate. How's that all going?
Yeah, she's an angel. I'm like probably every father. I'm absolutely smitten and wrapped around her finger. So hoping her mum continues to discipline her, because, yeah, it's very hard to say no to your little princess.
Yeah, it is. Mate, I'm intrigued about, I know you're so, you know, in this book at the moment, it's hard on a promotional tour, but I want to know where you're up to with your cricketing career. Because I don't think you've retired. I know my boy went and watched your mate 99 the other day at Mossman there. What are you doing?
I'm retired, mate.
What about T20?
Nah, look, honestly, right now, I'm so happy I've been given this opportunity with Channel 9 to commentate.
Right.
I'm really happy I've been, you know, I started my cricket academy about 4 years ago, and yeah. I think those two things will allow me to keep that love and passion in the game of cricket and help in that way. You know, I think my my time playing is now finished, and it's about moving on. And I've got a lot of other interests as well, which yeah. keeps my mind occupied. You know, I'll keep playing for my club if I've got opportunities through the summer where I'm free on a weekend, and I'll go back and keep playing for Western Suburbs. I really like that. I love the young guys at the club. But in regards to anything more, I think I'm really happy. Right. And it's probably taken me this time to get to that place. You know, it's taken me time away from the game. It's taken me to go back and play some club cricket to feel right. really comfortable with where I'm at, that when I retired from international cricket, I meant that.
But you were chasing a Big Bash contract, weren't you?
Say that again.
Were you chasing a Big Bash contract? Is that now not happening?
No, I'm 100% not playing Big Bash. In my contract with Channel 9, I'm unavailable to play. They don't want me to play Big Bash. But I was in talks with one team, really, over a period of time. And I guess my focus was if that opportunity comes up, then I might play. But I was uncertain. Mm. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I had obviously an opportunity with Channel 9, so it was about making a decision. I had to go one way or the other. I'm really happy with the decision I've made. And like I say, I think, I'm a retired Australian cricketer now who can
It's a wise choice, Clarkie, coming up to the commentary box. I mean, you become such a better player up there.
And again, in the air, Warner under it, takes it. Clark has his fifth. That's why Michael Clarke's still bowling. He wants the fifer.
I know he's a captain, but I also think he's a smart captaincy. They're playing shots. They've been aggressive.
There he is. We've had a few of you bowling this morning, Clarkie. That was sort of... it was a shame that your back got sore. Otherwise, you would have bowled more.
I'm not sure. I thought I was a horrible bowler. as a batsman, I would have loved to have faced me. I think I tried to bowl only when conditions were conducive to any part-time spinner to take some wickets. But, I loved bowling, though. I loved being in the game, you know, whether it was batting, bowling, put me somewhere where the ball's going in the field. I'd like to be a part of it. So, my back played a little part there, but I thought my bowling was horrible.
Peter on Facebook has asked the question, how is the back?
Mate, very good. Thank you. It's I guess with degeneration in three of my discs, I'm going to have to manage my back for the rest of my life, and I feel like I've probably got a much better system now of managing it. I think I work a lot harder on my mobility and flexibility now. I've got some good advisors that have seen the scans and know my back really well that I've been lucky enough to spend some time with, and they've helped me. And I think just the journey, the good days, the bad days, have helped me deal with the pain a lot better than what I probably used to. I'm a lot more consistent now with what I do on a daily basis, and I'm a lot more consistent with the mental side of accepting, you know, today's a tough day, and I'm open about it to Kylie and my friends, and they have an understanding now that, okay, he's in one of those moods, we know why.
Michael, a couple of quick ones from Twitter. Some of our listeners, Gordon says, have you made peace with Simon Cadditch?
I've never had to make peace with Simon Cadditch. We made peace the day after the event at the SCG, and as you'll see in my book, from my perspective, I've always had respect for Cat. I've always got on well with him. He was a tough competitor, and I loved having him in the same team that I was in. And from my perspective, I was brought up maybe it's a little bit of old school, that Western suburb style, but if you have a disagreement with someone, you go and have a beer straight after and get on with life.
Clarkey, throughout the book, you've been honest with a number of things, and you talk of tumour that could have become a cancer, and it was asked on Sunday night, and you said Shane Watson was part of that. Are you worried at offending any of your the guys you played with?
Oh, I don't want it. I haven't written the book to offend anybody. Again, I think I've been very self-reflective through the book. Yeah. I hope when people read it, they get that understanding that, you know, if I'm having a shot at anyone, I'm having a shot at myself. You know, Watto, as an example, is still a good friend and someone that I really valued in our team. I saw Watto as good a talent as someone like Jack Callis. And yeah. I think, again, where Watto hasn't got enough credit is for how many injuries he had to still have the discipline and the love of the game to keep fighting to try and get back into that team. I think a lot of people see the negative side in all the injuries Watto had, but I saw the determination that he was able to turn things around and keep trying to get on the field. So, you know, I haven't, with a lot of things I bring up, I talk about Caddo, I talk about Watto. You know, the only relationship that I think is really broke down through my career was that of with Andrew Simons.
Yes.
And it still hurts me that we don't have that friendship that we used to have. So, you know, I really hope people, when they read the book, they see that, you know, I was to blame, a big part to blame anyway, for the Caddo incident in regards to what came out of my mouth. I think the way I spoke to him was extremely disrespectful, and I take responsibility for that. You know, with Watto, I tried to get the best out of him all through my career, whether I was captain or not. And again, like I say, I have the utmost respect for Watto as a player and for a person.
Clarkey, just a quick general cricket question. The office of Australian captaincy, which intrigues me, and we discuss it a lot, yeah. Has it been diminished by the current hierarchy?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's changed. I don't know if diminish is the right word. I think it's changed. And again, through the book, because I know through my career at the back end, a lot of people saw I was fighting with Cricket Australia or disagreeing with Darren Lehman or Rod Marsh or Pat Howard. And I make it very clear that it wasn't about the person. You know, I still talk to Buff regularly. He's such a great guy, and I've been close to him my whole career. I played with Buff. You know, Rod Marsh was my head coach at the academy when I was a kid, and I probably see Rod like a second dad. So I'm very close to these guys. So it wasn't about the individual that I was finding it hard to deal with. It was more the structure change, the system change, where I grew up with, you know, the teams my dad played in, the teams I grew up watching, Mark Taylor, Alan Border, Steve Waugh, Rick Ponting, they were all in charge of their team. The Chapels, you know, I've had a number of conversations through my career with Ian Chappell, and he would say, mate, the wins and losses go against your name. You need to get what you want. And I'd say, Chaps, the system has changed. It's not like that. You now have a high-performance manager, a chairman of selectors, a head coach, and then the captain. So really, my job was to look after the guys on the field. But I believe in cricket, in a sport that you play for over a five-day period. I think the captain needs to have a lot more input than that. I think the captain needs to know his players very well, know their strengths, know their weaknesses, be able to look after them, and be in charge of a lot of decisions that are made both on the field and off the field. And I'm not here saying that the current system is not working. I think it'll be fantastic, and I think Steve Smith will be great and understand it because he's started with that system. If I started with that system, you accept, do you want the job or do you not want the job?
Yeah.
The hardest thing for me was when I took over the captaincy, the system wasn't like how it is today. A transition was made at the back end of my captaincy or halfway through my captaincy that unfortunately I found hard to deal with. So I had to make a decision. You either deal with it or you don't do it. And I decided to walk away.
Clarkey, that's it, mate. The half hour. We'd love to have seen you, but I know you got held up in traffic. We will get the chopper
really
to you. We'll get the chopper to you next time, mate, and we'll make
give
sure.
Give it a rest.
I'm in
the holding ute. My cattle dog drinking a VB as we speak.
You're at Macca's on Forest Way. I know where you are.
I wish, mate.
We're urging all our viewers and listeners to buy your book, mate. It will be a fantastic read. Thanks for your time this morning, and I will see you in the commentary box soon.
Yeah.
I will, buddy. I'm looking forward to it. I'll be, I think I'm doing one of the Matador Cup games. So
beautiful.
I look forward to that. But thanks, boys. Thanks for your support as always. And thanks for having me today.
Talk soon. Thank you. It's called Michael Clark, My Story. Make sure that you go out and get it.